If you're a smoker, I've got some good news for you. It's never too late to quit, and the benefits of quitting are immense. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to give you an extra incentive to kick the habit after this.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
No matter how old you are or how long you've been smoking, quitting now can add years to your lifespan. A new study out of Michigan reveals that smokers of any age live longer on average once they give up the nasty habit. A 35-year-old smoker gains an additional 8 years. A 65-year-old gains nearly 2 years. And even a 75-year-old can gain almost one more year of life from quitting smoking. Those are great numbers. Each additional day you live is priceless. So steel up your resolve and say goodbye to the cigarettes. You'll feel better, look better, and live longer. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht for StartMail.com, the private email alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Apple Mail.
This is the Dr. Catherine Albrecht Show.
Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army again. Babylon. Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop. Call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them. Wave your hand to encourage them. March into the palaces of the high and mighty. I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. Yes, I have called mighty warriors to express my anger. They will rejoice when I am exalted.
Hello, good afternoon. Happy Good News Friday. Catherine Albrecht here, taking into the weekend, ending another week. I don't know about you, but I had a lot done this week, especially today. I finally decided that a big disorganized chunk of my studio needed to be organized. So I've spent the last couple hours doing that. Oh my gosh, it feels better. If you have something like that in your life, something, some pile, some corner, some room, some area, some project that's unfinished and has just been kind of in the background, you know, you walk by it and you kind of think, yeah, eventually I'll get to that. You know, I was thinking what it is that prevents us from doing that. When projects are new, when they're fresh, this isn't true for everybody, but it's true for a lot of us. When projects are new and fresh, it's like you get a big burst of adrenaline, lots of energy, and you're ready to go. But if you do not complete it in that first initial wave of enthusiasm and it moves into a different category in your life, which is the category of things I should do, things I need to do, things I am supposed to do. In other words, if it moves from an inspiration to a chore, then it kind of can get stuck. And so that is what had happened to me. In fact, that's happened to me. I have a number of things that are in that status right now, that are in that state. And so I'm going to challenge you to identify the ones that you have in that state, and one by one, let's knock them out, because there's something about just getting it done. Now, I have a little bit of a strategy. I actually have been giving a lot of thought to why it is that things like this tend to pile up and not get done. And the longer they don't get done, the harder they are to start. And what I realized is that there's a putting onto the brakes that you have to do, and a reorientation of your brain, especially if you're a person. this might happen for women a lot. I'm not sure. Might happen a lot for women. You got so many things to do and it's go, go, go. And you're accustomed, if you're a mom, and maybe just women in general, maybe we just multitask well, but you're accustomed to kind of do things as you go. You know, you're walking across the room and you see a kid's toy on the floor. You just bend down and pick it up. You are in the middle of, making dinner and somebody needs something. And while keeping one part of your brain on the pot that's on the flame, you attend to the other thing, but you also are paying attention to how much time you've got to go back to that. And you can multiply that. See, I've heard guys, it's a little different. I've heard that you guys kind of go from one task to another. We women have multiple tasks going on at once. And here's the solution. I don't know if it's the solution. One strategy to overcome procrastination is the reason I realized that I am not getting done the thing, right? Whatever it was, like in this case, I don't even know how much detail I want to go into, but my studio had some unresolved physical junk in it. And in order to resolve that physical junk, that's not like, picking up a kid's toy. That's not like, you know, you're on your way in from the car, you've parked and you want to just go in the house, but you look around and you go, I need to bring these things in from the car or my car is going to be a mess, right? So there's these certain things that you do just in passing, but fixing this particular problem was not something I could just do in passing. And since I am constantly passing, that's kind of my steady state in the world, it seems, is doing things in passing. A project that cannot be done in that way requires you to refocus your brain and actually set aside all of the other tasks, all of the other thoughts, projects, ideas, all the other things you're doing, and say, right now, I am going to do this. And I think that's the reason why when it's inspiration, it's easy. It's like, oh, I'm inspired. I'll just do this. But a day or two later, it becomes, well, I can't, I could do that, but I'm in the middle of doing 50 other things and I'm not just going to stop what I'm doing and do that. So anyway, I don't know if this is helpful to anyone out there. I, like so many women, have discovered in adulthood that I have ADHD. I don't consider it to be a pathology, I guess, like the mental health professionals believe it to be kind of a deficit, something sort of wrong. I actually consider it to be properly managed, a superpower. It is pretty amazing to be able to juggle 15 projects at once and flit your attention from one to the other and then back again at will. But if you have ADHD, and maybe you don't know if you do, but if this is ringing a bell, that unwillingness or your brain's, I won't call it an inability, I'll call it just a discomfort with disciplining your brain to focus not on all the other things around you, but set aside time and focus without the inspiration. That's the part. Because with the inspiration, man, I can go 24 hours. I can stay up all night working on a project if I'm inspired. But once the inspiration's gone, there's no more adrenaline flowing on a project. Oh my gosh, it's pulling teeth to go back and get it done. And so I'll be sharing my journey because I'm testing out different ways to do this. But the one thing I can tell you is that if you set aside the time, if you actually say, I'm not, you know, here I am. I mean, I can't do it in passing. I'll get to it later, later, later. It's always later. If you actually set aside the time and spend about 10, 15 minutes on it, the inspiration begins to flow. And that's what happened today. I'm sitting in a spotlessly clean, like organized, decorated studio in a cool new way that I've kind of had in the back of my mind for a while since I set this studio up months and months ago. And now here it is. And how did it get here? It got here because I finally said, you know, oh my gosh, I don't want to do this. And then 10, 15 minutes into it, I was like, hey, I'm kind of getting into this. And then the brain chemicals flow. So if you know anything about ADHD, it's kind of interesting. They've done brain studies of this way of functioning. I don't like calling it attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. But that's the name people give it, ADHD. But I prefer a kind of a different way of thinking about it, which is thinking about it as a mind that requires inspiration and it has a hard time mustering it from, I don't know, 0 to 60, has a hard time getting from 0 to 60, a hard time mustering the inspiration from scratch. And brain studies, MRI studies, actually back that up. If you, if you're not a person with ADHD and you have a task to complete, maybe we can go back and think about high school, right? You're assigned, your English teacher assigns you a paper, your history teacher assigns you, you know, somebody's going to be 5 pages long. It's going to take some time. Well, people without ADHD will oftentimes make a schedule and they'll say, I'm going to work on this an hour a day or a couple hours a week until 3 weeks from now when I can turn it in. And they will sit down to do it and spend their hour. And when the hour's up, they can get up and go do a different thing. Now, that's always blown my mind because I don't work like that. I can't. And in fact, I have sat down more times than I can count to, it's not lack of discipline, because I will sit down, I'll carve out the hour, I'm saying, I'm going to do it. And I sit down and nothing flows. I mean, I just am looking at the screen and I'll start typing and an hour later I'll have like 3 sentences that I've rewritten 5 times and I can't think of a thing. But the day before it's due, or, you know, if it's a really big project, probably a couple days before it's due, I'll go, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble if I don't get this done. And then the adrenaline kicks in, the fear, really. It's a panic. And if you are a person who finds that you do your best work at the last minute under panic, then that's probably why. So let me tell you about the brain studies. There are regions of the brain that activate when a person without ADHD decides to do something. The mere act of deciding to do it is enough to make those brain chemicals, those neurochemicals, flow into the energy section of their brain. But if you have ADHD and you sit down to do it, they can actually look at your brain, like me, I'm sure if they did an MRI, when I sat down to do my work and could think of nothing, that part of the brain is not fueled with any neurochemicals. It's all willpower, and that's just not enough to get it done. All right, I have other things to talk about, but I wanted to share that.
Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust. Your email is your business. But if it's spied on, hacked, or intercepted, it can fall into the wrong hands. The solution is encryption, a high-tech way to scramble your data so no one can read it. For years, only the technical elite could use this powerful tool, until StartMail came along. StartMail not only lets you encrypt the email you send, it encrypts your entire account. Encryption. It's just one more way StartMail.com keeps you safe.
Night watchman, how long till daybreak? Night watchman, how long till daybreak? How long will this night last? How long will this night last? Morning's coming, morning's coming, but for now, it's still night.
Hey, I'm back. Catherine Albrecht here. That's Project of Love. I uploaded like 25 or 30 songs. I'm not sure why we kind of keep getting the same ones, but hopefully next week we'll expand the rotation just a little bit. But maybe those are songs we need to be thinking about. Night Watchman, how long till daybreak? Morning is coming, and that's a big part of what I believe my job is, I guess, my task. long-time listeners know, or over the last, what, 6-8 months, long-time listeners know that in September, I went from having an empty nest and saying, what am I going to do after 8 years off the air? And very specifically felt the Lord say, go back on the air, get your radio show back, and declare my name to the nations. And I did not know. I had not been following the news. I hadn't really been aware of just how bad things had gotten in the area that that I kind of have been, I don't know, directed to my whole life, which is technology and the fulfillment of the predictions in Revelation about a time when people will not be able to buy or sell, and without a number and the mark of the beast, and there will be a beast that controls the whole earth. And of course, from there, I found that artificial intelligence is right on the brink of doing that. And I've been writing, well, for like the last week or so, motivated, inspired with my brain producing the proper chemicals day after day. It's really cool to get a book written on that. And I have given myself a deadline of mid-September. It was mid-September last year when this whole project for me began. So I'll be keeping you posted on the things I'm studying and researching and discovering and writing about. But, you know, just thinking about that process of inspiration. So here I am in my studio. This is where I'm writing. This is where I'm writing my book, you know, chapter after chapter, doing my research. And I want to be in a space that I really like. I want to enjoy my space. And so today, it was hard. It was pulling teeth. I almost wanted to like take a nap, and I wasn't even tired, rather than begin this project that I knew I had to do involving physical space. It's much easier for me to do research, you know, to look up facts. And I looked up all kinds of interesting stuff today about the Middle Ages and about the Age of Enlightenment and the scientific revolution and all these things. So I'm bursting with information that I could share with you. But I realized that I really needed to focus on this other issue. So just in terms of that whole ADHD thing, let me tell you why ADHD medication can actually be helpful for people who struggle to get their brains whipped into gear doing the project that they sit themselves down and say, darn it, my willpower says I will do this, and then your brain just doesn't cooperate. So the ADHD medications that are on the market now are actually shown through these MRIs to enable the neurochemicals to flow into the action area of the brain like they do in everybody else who doesn't have a brain that works this way. So my brain, I don't think there's anything even slightly wrong with it. I do not believe that quote-unquote ADHD is a diagnosis of something wrong. I think it is just that those of us whose brains work this way on inspiration are, it's a little more challenging for us, I think, to fit into the expectations of society, because society expects you to be able to sit down and just get your work done a bit at a time on a schedule the way everybody else does. And for me, you know, it's interesting. If there were an emergency, let's say an intellectual emergency, I don't know, like maybe a radio show where you've got to think quick on the spot and your brain has to work, that is where you want that capability. When the music comes up for this show, my brain instantly is flooded with those action chemicals. They just flow. I don't feel stressed. I feel perfectly calm. It's phenomenal. But if you've ever wondered, like, why is it that some people can just talk on the radio and are not stressed out or not nervous? You'll be shocked to know, I don't do a whole lot of preparation. I've known other radio hosts. I had someone fill in for me a couple of years ago, way back, I don't know, probably 15 years ago when I was doing my show, filled in for me, and she showed up with pages and pages of carefully detailed notes and an outline for the show. And I remember looking at that going, is that what I'm supposed to be doing? Is that how is that how they do it? And then I listened to the show, and it was like, you ever been at a really boring PowerPoint presentation? I hate to say this because it was kind of her to fill in for me. But you know what I'm talking about? Like some PowerPoint presentations, they've written everything out. It's carefully organized and detailed, and there's bullet points. And then they stand up and read it. And if you've ever seen one of my PowerPoint presentations, each slide has maybe a phrase or a word, a little title, and then a picture. And that triggers my brain to go into all the details and the bullet points and tell you about it. But it's a little more interesting when somebody's doing that off the top of their head or out of their heart than if they're doing that because they've carefully prepared. So it's really two different ways of approaching the world. Are you a person who approaches the world through a carefully thought through, detailed outline and shows up to things prepared and on time? Or are you a person who, when the music comes up or the deadline arrives or, you know, somebody says, go, your brain just kicks into gear and does it without a whole lot of preparation? Those really, I think, are two very different ways of approaching the world. And a lot of people who have that not structured, not organized, not outlined, not detailed, not pre-planned orientation towards life, well, they go into careers like, being surgeons, right? In the emergency room. The operating theater, they call it a theater, and it kind of seems like that, right? The curtain rises and you're on, and it is now time to operate on the patient. Well, that's something where you need your brain to just kick into gear instantaneously. There's not a lot of outlines and details you can write about a particular surgery because it's moment by moment. Those are the people who have more of this. If you use Myers-Briggs, if you're familiar with the MBTI, it's that P orientation as opposed to J, meaning perceptive as opposed to judging. That's all Carl Jung, and I've become not a fan of his lately. But the philosophies or the explanation of human differences that he created that later turned into the Myers-Briggs temperament instrument, which is used in a lot of career counseling, divide people into these two categories. And it's about, I think, according to their research, it's about 50-50. About 50% of the people want that structure, that organization, and get really wigged out if things change, if the structure, you know, if the schedule changes. I remember my stepdad, he was super, super J, meaning very orderly and organized. And my mom was very much like me, but probably more so. She was just very, how would I say, like just go with the flow. I mean, things could change in a moment. And she was a ton of fun and just a very kind of intelligent, resourceful, interesting person who rose to every occasion. And I remember one situation between the two of them. Can you imagine them being married? They were about as opposite as two people could be. He wanted, after they'd been married like a year or two, and he told her, he said, one thing I really would appreciate would be if you could just let me know in advance what the week's menu for dinner is going to be. And my mom's like, I have no idea. So anyway, to keep the peace, my mom actually forced herself into that mold. And she, just generally, it wasn't detailed. It wasn't like every single thing on the menu. But she would say, you know, just generally on Monday, we're going to have spaghetti. And on Tuesday, it'll be, you know, I don't know, baked chicken or something. And one of the spaghetti days, my mom was at the grocery store and they had some huge sale on filet mignon. And without telling her husband, she prepared filet mignon that night, which is so much better than spaghetti, right? I'm telling you that that was one of the moments that I went, I get there's this real difference between people, because he was upset at the filet mignon because it was not what was planned. It was a change in plans and he hadn't been alerted. And so my poor mom, you know, she was like, I thought you'd be happy. This is so much nicer of a meal. And I prepared it specially and it's got rosemary and I don't know what all else. And they had, obviously she left that feeling very, very hurt. And he felt, you know, she just doesn't doesn't care about what I need, which is this schedule to be kept, you know, things to be planned. I was actually studying at, I was getting my my master's, and I was writing, I wrote software. I was learning to program educational software, and I wrote a program that provided various scenarios in order for people to determine where they fell in this. And one of my questions was this, and you can see how you would answer it. And I remember telling this to my stepdad. I said, if a fairy godmother appeared with a wand and said she's going to give you a gift, and that gift is to know every single day exactly what's going to happen for the rest of your life. And they'll leave the last little part out. You don't need to know when you're going to die or get sick or anything like that. But all of the other things, they're all going to be shown. They'll all be shown to you. The you know, any stock market changes, any real estate fluctuations, any political shifts, but also your personal life. And it's interesting because if you present that scenario to these people who are on the extreme of these two ends, the person who is kind of like me will go, oh my gosh, no, anything but that. I don't want it. I could not imagine that anyone would. And yet when I presented that to him, he said, oh, boy, that would be the greatest thing I could ever get. You know, one of the worst things about life is that you can't have that. So talk about different. Talk about different. But Pastor Anthony has been talking about marriage, actually his previous series. And I was just thinking how important it is that we recognize that about each other, recognize these differences, and respect each other. All right, stay tuned. And ourselves, by the way. Respect ourselves. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Is your email box overrun with spam? With a StartMail account, you'll never have to give your real email address to a stranger again. Online shopping, newsletter subscriptions, getting that 30% off coupon, they all need your email address. But with StartMail, you can invent new addresses or aliases linked to your inbox behind the scenes and give those out to people while keeping your real address hidden. It's just one more protection from StartMail.com. Why are most email programs free? Companies use them as bait to lure people into their system so they can scan their data and sell them to advertisers. It's like a hotel giving out free rooms so they can film people sleeping and then sell the video. You'd never agree to that. StartMail restores your privacy. No one but you sees your sensitive data, and it costs less than a postage stamp a week. StartMail.com. It's email you can trust.
Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. Casting all your care upon Him, casting all your worries upon Him, for He cares for you, He cares for you, He cares, He cares for you.
Hey, I'm back. Catherine Albrecht here. So there is a radio host who, well, let me back up. I think all radio hosts who are actually any good, right? Well, in my opinion, any good, radio hosts who just casually can get on the air and talk about anything, radio hosts who are able to, have a caller call in with anything, just throw anything. I think you could pretty much throw anything at me, and I would be able to respond. I would not need to prepare. I don't need notes. You could throw something at me I've never seen before. And I could probably ad lib. If you could, improv, where you give somebody a topic and say, hey, do a skit on this or talk about this. I could do that. That is I believe, the personality of our radio host. And if I, when I looked up, years ago, you know, I've been a tutor, I've been a teacher, I've been an author, I've been a lot of different things, but this is the most natural thing in the world for me. It's like falling off a log easy. It is not, it's just like a natural fit to my, the way my brain works, my personality and my temperament. And it is also the case that I think virtually every single radio host that you listen to who seems comfortable in the air, quick to respond, kind of unflappable, things just kind of come at them and they seem like they're cool as a cucumber managing them. That is not because they've spent years practicing. It's not because they went to, you know, they have a degree in communications. It's just because they are people wired that way who just found something that they could be good at in that arena. My stepdad, by the way, was an accountant. He was a CPA. So that is something that I would, I can think of many, many, many things I would rather do than that, including, I don't know, probably being in jail, honestly. If I could be myself in jail or be a CPA out of jail, I'd probably prefer jail. Literally, that's how much that is not me. That's very, very opposite. But radio hosts, among radio hosts, Tom Hartman, if you, T-H-O-M-H-A, how do you spell his last name? H-A-R-T-M-A-N-N, I think. He's been around for a while. He is on the left, sort of liberal side of the radio spectrum. He's rather unique in that regard because most talk radio hosts tend to be on the conservative end. But anyway, he, for, I don't know, the last couple of decades, this guy has been using his ADHD brain, his research orientation, which all of us radio hosts also have, and he has been looking into this phenomenon of ADHD, saying that it isn't a pathology. It is, it's reading what he's written. I'm like, yes, this is a radio host. And I think probably if you were to talk to all the radio hosts that that you listen to, that you would find they all have this. But he has a book out. This is just one of his many books that he's written on this. From 2019. It's called ADHD, A Hunter in a Farmer's World. And I'm just going to read you the description here from Amazon. I have not read this book. I'm not even sure I need to read this book because this just resonates with what I already know. But if you are either maybe you have ADHD and you need to feel a little better about yourself, or if you're struggling to deal with someone else who has it, this might be a good book to read because it depathologizes. Pathology means to call something an illness or something wrong. Right, so pathologists in medicine, well, they study the development of disease, for example. So to pathologize something is to take a phenomenon, whatever it is, and say that it's not okay. All right, well, pathologizing this kind of brain is something that Tom Hartman has been coming out against for a long time. And let me read you the description here. A newly revised and updated edition of the classic guide to reframing our view of ADHD and embracing its benefits. All right. It explains that people with ADHD are not disordered or dysfunctional, but are simply hunters in a farmer's world, possessing a unique mental skill set that would have allowed them to thrive in a hunter-gatherer society. The book offers concrete, non-drug methods and practices to help hunters, as he calls this personality type that I guess Jung would call the perceptives, and their parents, teachers, and managers embrace their differences, nurture creativity, and find success in school, at work, and at home. Reveals how some of the world's most successful people can be labeled as ADHD hunters, including Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Edison, Andrew Carnegie, and the list goes on and on and on. With 10% of the Western world's children suspected of having attention deficit disorder or ADHD, and a growing number of adults self-diagnosing after decades of struggle, the question must be raised, how could nature make such a mistake? In this updated edition of his groundbreaking classic, Tom Hartman explains that people with ADHD are not, as we said, abnormal, disordered, or dysfunctional. They are often highly creative and single-minded in pursuit of a self-chosen goal. They possess a unique mental skill set. As hunters, they would have been constantly scanning their environment, looking for food or threats. That's the distractibility, right? That they say ADHD, it's like a attention deficit. Well, you're not focused enough. Well, people with ADHD, if there's a threat, if something happens or something changes or something's going on, we can turn on a dime and attend to the other thing that's come up in a way that I think my stepdad probably wouldn't have been as good at. Looking for threats, they would have to act without hesitation. That's the thing that the modern sociologists or psychiatrists call impulsivity, right? But you need that, right? If you're out hunter-gathering and there's something going on, you need to respond to it quickly. You need to pay attention to it and respond to it instantly. That's why people with this perceptive personality type are really great at being first responders. They're really great at being, the 911 operator. They're really great at being the person who can just rise to an emergency occasion. Airline pilots, for example, you know, that guy who landed the plane in the, is it in the Potomac? I don't know. In New York, all those guys doing those amazing kind of creative feats where an emergency arose and they just knew what to do and coolly did it. That's what Tom Hartman's talking about here. They would have to love the high stimulation and risk-filled environment of the hunting field. With our structured public schools, office workplaces, and factories, those who inherit a surplus of these hunter skills are often left frustrated in a world that doesn't understand or support them. As Hartman shows, by reframing our view of ADHD, we can begin to see it not as a disorder, but simply as a difference, and in some ways, an advantage. He reveals, I don't have time to tell the story before the break is coming up, but I do want to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a story of how I... as a teacher, as a tutor, as a mentor to young people, was able to provide a lot of encouragement to young people. Because if any of what I'm saying is resonating with you, and then I'm guessing that you have spent much of your life being told that you're a flake, you're not okay, that doing the things the way you do things is not okay. And what Tom Hartman is saying is, well, you know, we've really changed the way we've structured society to the point now where, I don't want to say survival of the fittest, it's not, but I guess the people who survive in this society are the people who fit into the boxes. 12,000 hours of seat time in a public school is what it takes to graduate high school. That's your bottom in a chair, not moving around, not responding to sudden challenges as they arise, but just diligently following through assignment after assignment as it's given to you. That's tough for people with this, as Tom Hartman would say, that this hunter mentality. And yet in our society today, there are jobs that people with this approach to life can do and do really well, like being a radio host, like being a first responder, like being a salesperson, like being, there's a whole list of them. If you're interested in pursuing this further, I would say look into Tom Hartman's writing. Also, you can look into the Myers-Briggs MBTI temperament instrument. There's versions of it online that you can take, and there's some great books on it. But it is the, out of the four letters on there, they talk about introversion, extroversion, thinking and feeling, whether you're oriented towards people, towards logic or emotion, intuitive sensory, whether you're oriented towards theoretical ideas or practical facts. And this is the final one, whether you are a person who likes things to be structured and planned out and orderly and predictable, or whether you're a person who struggles in that environment and really thrives when the adrenaline starts flowing, the deadline comes up, the microphone goes live, whatever it might be. They're really two very different ways of being. And it can help you, I think, to... especially people with ADHD, because we're the people judged, right? It can help you if you have ADHD to realize that some of the most successful people in our society have this rise to the occasion. I mean, look at the difference between, IBM and Apple, right? All right, stay tuned.
Okay, I've been hearing a lot about the LifeWave patches, and they sound amazing. And I'm thinking I want to try them for myself. But can you tell me how they work?
Okay, well, you wear the patch, which is about the size of a quarter, 12 hours a day, 12 on, 12 off. And the patch uses your body's own light and energy and copper peptides to reactivate the dormant stem cells in your body. Once a stem cell has been reactivated, it can be used by any of the cells in your body that need it, creating a healing and growth process you haven't experienced since your youth. So in a nutshell, this is how the LifeWave X39 patch works.
You can purchase the LifeWave patches by going to americasfreedomnetwork.com. Then click on the Natural Health Products button at the top of the page. That's americasfreedomnetwork.com.
Look, this product works, and you've got nothing to lose because there's a 100% money-back guarantee.
That's americasfreedomnetwork.com.
God is in this place, truly. God is in this place, truly. Incredible, wonderful, holy.
Back. Catherine Albrecht here. All right, so I think I've told this story before. So humor me if you've already heard it, but I have a couple listeners here in the chat room and elsewhere I've been asking, and they haven't heard it, so you might have missed it. I might have talked about this somewhere a couple months ago before people found my show. So let me tell the story, and apologies if I'm repeating it for people who've already heard it, but I think it bears repeating. So a number of years ago, I was one of a group, one of many local community sort of professionals who was asked to come into our local public middle school on a Saturday, which was kind of a, I don't know if it was like a career day or a sort of, you know, let professionals come in and share their wisdom and knowledge with the kids. And I signed up for that. And they gave us a sheet of paper where we, you know, a little form where we filled out the topic we wanted to teach. And so I filled out on mine, the title of it was, So You Can't Find Your Notebook. And it was for students who struggle to be organized in middle school. And when I got there, there were about, I'd say probably 25 kids in the class, and you could tell they totally didn't want to be there. Nobody, I think, voluntarily signed up for my class. I'm sure it was parents frustrated with their kids who lose their notebooks and show up late. That was me in school. Oh my gosh. I barely even made it out of middle school because I could never find my books. Even to this day, I struggle to find the stuff that but my brain is ready to work and finding the stuff is kind of hard. So I titled it that way, knowing that I was going to get kids in there whose parents had said, all right, you better straighten up, fly right. In fact, this this woman with a doctorate from Harvard is going to set you straight. So I walk into the room and I had on a suit. I had on, heels. I had a little briefcase, and I come into the room and there's all of these kids now, middle schoolers are what, 6th, 7th, 8th grade. So these kids are between like 11 and 13, somewhere in that range. And I used to actually teach classroom middle school, so I know this age group pretty well. So I go into the room and I say hi and I introduce myself and I say, well, first let me tell you a little bit about myself before we get started. And I proceeded to paint the most positive picture of myself I possibly could. And I said, well, let me tell you some things about myself. I have a doctorate from Harvard University in human development and psychology. I spent my 10th grade year as an exchange student in Mexico. By the way, all of this is true. I said, instead of going to 10th grade, I spent my 10th grade year as an exchange student in Mexico. And when I came back, I tested out of high school. I took the California High School Proficiency Exam and got an equivalency. And at the age of 15, I was still 15, I started college. Yeah. And I finished college at 19. And then I started a business. I started a tutoring agency, and I had worked my way through college tutoring. And when I graduated, I started a tutoring agency. And so I hired and trained people, and I, you know, built, I converted an office and put up partitions and desks and figured out how to use software to do accounting and marketing. And anyway, so I did that. And then after a couple of years of doing that, I went into some of the other stuff that I had done. I lived in Oregon. I lived in Portland, Oregon, and worked for the Bureau of Labor and Industry, believe it or not. I have lived in Seattle. I have lived a lot of different places. And now there I was in New Hampshire teaching this class. And I said, all right, so... and I'm also a radio host. I'm a radio host. Oh, and I have a best-selling book out. All right. So I said, now, on the basis of all of that, so that's just me, just so you know who's teaching you. And then I said, all right, now let's get started. Let's talk about you can't find your notebook. I said, there's really two kinds of people in the world. And I drew a line down the whiteboard. And on the left-hand side, I put what Myers-Briggs would call the J's, the structured judging people. And I said, you know, always on time, organized, completes all their assignments, meets all of society's expectations, gets... disciplined, hardworking, never late, punctual, whatever. And so I put that down. And then on the other side, I put this other set, this other constellation of temperament characteristics, which is open-ended, spontaneous, impulsive, doesn't necessarily follow society's rules, often late, struggles to get their assignments done, works at the last minute, might stay up all night before something's due. All right, so I put all these down, and there's more to it. I'm simplifying here, but I put down essentially the overview of the Myers-Briggs judging and perceiving temperaments. And then, now remember, I've just impressed these guys with all of my amazing all of my amazing credentials and the fabulous stuff I've done, whatever. And I said, now I have a question for you guys. Now, bear in mind, I'm here. I've got my hair curled. My makeup's perfect. I'm wearing a suit. And I say to these kids, which one do you think I am? And so I point to the first one and all the hands go up. And I said, okay, now how many people think I'm this? And one little hand of one little middle school boy kind of goes up, and sort of tentative. And he knows he's the only one in the room with his hand up. And I said, guess what, guys? He's right. This is, he is correct. That is my temperament. I said, how in the world did you know? And he said, well, you haven't followed any of the rules. You didn't graduate high school. You went to Mexico instead of being in 10th grade. You, started a business when you graduate college. Most people just get a job. You didn't do that. And then he went on and on and named a couple of other things. And so my point here to these kids was to say, guess what, guys? You know, your parents who sent you here, your teachers who say you are not good enough, who say you are, there's something defective about you because you can't find your notebook. Well, guess what? It can be a superpower, and it can enable you to do incredible things that other people won't have the, I don't know if it's not have the guts to do. I don't want to say it that way and insult anybody, but won't think outside the box to do. And I
wanted those kids at the end of it, was like a 2-hour little mini seminar. And I, at the end of it, I believe that I had inspired them with hope. That's a terrible way to put it, but with hope. I also put up examples of famous people throughout history who have been of this type. And there's a lot of us because it's 50% of the population. So for people who are still listening to this, I want to give you that very same message that I gave to those kids, which is stop allowing the world to and what you perceive as your shortcomings to live up to those particular expectations to blind you to the things that you're amazing at and that you are far better able to do than they could do. So it is true that people who are more structured, are certainly much, much better at delivering things in a consistent, steady way than I am. They are much more punctual than I am. They are much more many, many things than I am. But the superpower that I bring to my life is the fact that when I am inspired, when I'm on, when that adrenaline's flowing, nothing can stop me. And so you want the surgeon who's gonna operate on you after a car accident. You want your surgeon to be that kind of person. You want those people to actually fill society because they maintain it and actually make it work. Well, I don't know. I think the other guys maintain it. I think we spice it up a little bit. So, all right. Well, I just had to share that. I think that I know that there's a reason for all of us to, as body parts, to exist in the body of Christ. We are told that in the New Testament. Paul makes it very clear that some of us are meant to be the adrenaline. Some of us are meant to be the skeleton, you know, the structure, the things that keep things solid and stable and predictable. And, you know, we are all here for a reason, and the skills and talents and abilities that we bring are actually put there for a reason. So I want to depathologize this notion of temperamental difference and instead say, you know, hey, we're all made the way we are because God has a purpose for that. Can you imagine if every single body part was a skeleton or a finger? We'd kind of be in trouble. So there may only be one of you. You may be a pancreas. You may be, you may be a heart. You may be one of those parts of the body that doesn't really look like anybody else, but the body sure wouldn't function without you. All right, coming up on the weekend, thanks so much for spending this hour with me. All right, God bless you. I'll see you Monday. Bye-bye. Thank you.